served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. And you have found the place where we talk about elder law, real estate, business law, estate planning. That's right, good old estate planning. So if you have a question, a comment, or concern about wills, trusts, or probate, if you're wondering, you know, how do we beat the high cost of long-term care and what is all that elder law stuff and Medicaid stuff all about, well, you found the place to give us a shout, 888-463-2843. This is our last show of 2013. That's right. And we're still playing the Christmas music. Because why? Because we're still in the octave of Christmas, for crying out loud. You know, 12 days of Christmas and all that good stuff. Well, that's why we get more, you know. So stick around. We get we got Christmas bumper music. And pretty soon it'll be a new year. And we have made a New Year's resolution for you. A New Year's resolution that's not only easy to keep, it's also fun to keep. And, of course, that New Year's resolution is coming to a life plan workshop. That's baby steps, you know, one step, not doing a trust, no, forget it, don't do that, that's not our resolution. Just come to a life plan workshop, you know, see, find out if the cookies are as good as we say, and, well, provided you like oatmeal raisin cookies, I suppose, and we take it from there, how about that? Let's get to some of our emails, 888-463-2843 is how you call us. 888-463-2843. That's 888-GO-DAVID. Email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. Website, davidcarrierlaw.com. And on the website, we have the upcoming workshops. We would love to see you there. This is not an unusual situation, unfortunately. Let's get to sort of an undue influence question. If changes are made to revocable trust 5 days prior to death, and grantor spelled their own name wrong, first name wrong, they spelled that wrong, and then spelled the last name wrong twice, is it valid? Grantor also had problems seeing, hearing, and recognizing loved ones. All five changes significantly benefited the caregiver of the grantor. Well, you never want to jump to conclusions, right? And the fact that it happened 5 days before somebody died. Well, we've had people, you know, making changes, valid changes, hours before death. I mean, for some people, it's just that way, you know. And for some people, they really do. I mean, this really does happen. I mean, they keep themselves alive until they've made the changes that they wanted. You know, that's something that was bothering them. I had an experience several years ago. The client was in an isolation ward in the hospital. You know, he had to get all gowned up to go in there, and practically comatose, really, for days. But this was something very important to her. One of the family members, oh, you got to do that. You know, you got to go there. Blah blah. Okay, so we did, and this person roused themselves up, right? And the nurses who were there were just astonished. They said, you know, the fact that she was conversing, the fact that she had very definite ideas about who about who would get her dog. I don't want so-and-so getting the dog. I do want the other person getting the dog, you know. And we had probably a 15-minute conversation. She was dead several hours later. But it was one of those things where, you know, she was just living to make sure that these arrangements had been made. And the nurses were like, you know, you're wasting your time going in there because she's been fairly barely responsive for the last day or so. But, you know, we gave it in. You know what I mean? So the fact that somebody made changes 5 days before they died is not, you know, doesn't end the question. The fact that they spelled their name wrong doesn't end the question for me either. Okay. But the fact that the grantor has problems seeing and hearing, well, I mean, a lot of people do. But recognizing loved ones, well, come on now. And then the fact that all five changes to the document benefited the caregiver, significantly benefited the caregiver. Well, I mean, you know, we'll go a long way, but, I mean, that's stinking fish, isn't it? I mean, wait a second. You know, and that could, it could happen, but here's the way this works. When you're challenging a will or a trust, okay, when you're challenging that, you basically have two ways to go on it. The first way is you challenge the capacity of the person to make those decisions. You say, look, Mom didn't know who she was, where she was, when she was, had no idea who the natural objects of her bounty were, right, are, and didn't know what she had, you know, and basically lacked the mental capacity. That's pretty tough, unless the person is, you know, long-term dementia, unless they have a conservator. It's pretty difficult to show lack of mental capacity. I mean, you can have somebody who's on pain medications. You can have somebody who suffers from depression. You can have some people who are on all different kinds of stuff, and the courts will still uphold against the lack of mental capacity challenge. You have to show that the person at all times, that the person at the time they did this was not mentally incapacitated. And we've got two witnesses who say that they were, plus a notary. So, hey, you know, sorry. Very tough to show the lack of mental capacity. The other one is undue influence. Now, undue influence is a tricky concept. Undue influence means that the person who benefited from the changes, right, unduly influenced the person who made the change, unduly influenced the grantor. Well, what does that mean, undue influence? Well, it doesn't mean, I mean, the court cases on this, doesn't mean that you threw yourself on the ground and cried, Mom, please give me the house. Ooh, I'll, you know, or I'll hate you forever if you don't give me the house. Or, well, you can say things like that. You can wheedle. You can beg. You can plead. Okay? Human beings have been doing that for a very long time, and the law doesn't prohibit it. Okay? You can cry. You can use emotional coercion. All right? That's not undue influence. And it's up to the person who alleges undue influence. In the first case, right, when you're first starting out here, the person who says that so-and-so unduly influenced Mom, you've got to prove it. All right? And it's almost rises to the level of physical coercion. Okay, I'm going to unplug your oxygen tank unless you sign, you know, the documents. So undue influence, difficult to show in the first instance. But here's the thing. If the person who benefited from the changes was a fiduciary to the grantor, right, was the person who had a special responsibility to the grantor. So in this case, I'm just making out to be Mom, but here it's the caregiver, okay, and that can arise from the acts of the parties. You know, you don't have to be named as trustee. You don't have to be named as power of attorney, although those are definitely fiduciary responsibilities, you know, fiduciary roles, I should say. If you're the caregiver so that you are controlling the person's experience, life experience, you know, if that person is depending on you, special faith and confidence in your care of them, now the burden shifts to that person to prove that there was no undue influence. And when we get back, we'll go into that a little bit more, how that actually plays out in a case like this in the real world. In the meantime, sign up for a life plan workshop. Just go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com, and you can see where the upcoming workshops are. We do two of these a week now. It's easy to get into. You don't have to wait a month. You know, towards the end of the year, there were really the weights were getting up there, but we've added some new workshops, and so you should be able to get right in, and we would love to see you there. DavidCarrierLaw.com is where you find the upcoming schedule, and, of course, you can always drop us a line, David@DavidCarrierLaw.com. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. My true love gave to me two turtle doves and a partridge. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. This is the place, of course, where we find where we deal with estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So you found it. That's great. Give us a shout when I don't yet. Now, we were talking about a situation where immediately prior to death, the person made a bunch of changes that benefited their caregiver. Now, these are all fact questions, okay? And, you know, in a little short email, it's pretty tough to know exactly what's going on. But let's make some guesses. Let's assume that the caregiver is one of those, you know, is the one taking care of the person in their home who's been sort of the lifeline for the grantor, lifeline for mom or dad. And now there are all these changes immediately before death that benefit that caregiver. Well, in a situation like that, what you say is, hey, there was undue influence. The person who's basically, the lifeline, the air hose, you know, the person who can step on the air hose is the one saying, hey, don't you think I ought to get the house? Don't you think I ought to get the this, that, and the other thing? And then prior to death, the person agrees. Well, here's the way it works. We don't want to fill the courts. There's a lot of disappointed people out there, right? A lot of people who didn't get everything they thought they were going to get, and we don't want to make it too difficult for parents to disinherit kids, okay? We want to make sure, to the extent that we can, that the people we want to get stuff are the people who actually get it, okay? Now, if the court allowed every disappointed person to file a lawsuit alleging undue influence, okay, they wouldn't have time for anything else. There's a lot of disappointment out there. So what they do is they make it difficult, all right, they make it difficult for you to bring an action, a lawsuit for undue influence. They make it difficult. They say, you've got to prove undue influence. And guess what? Guess what? Making faces, throwing yourself on the floor, holding your breath till you turn blue, all those things are not undue influence. Okay, it's pretty tough to show undue influence. All right, so on the one hand, we make it, the wall around the courthouse is pretty high. But, here's the other thing. We do not want people who are in a special relationship, okay, we call it a fiduciary relationship, where the person is supposed to act not in their own interests, but in your interests, right? We don't want to make it so that those people can abuse the special faith and the special trust that has been placed in them. We want to make it difficult. We want to punish people who abuse that special relationship. So here's what we're going to do. Number one, if there is no special relationship, okay, if there is no fiduciary relationship, then you have the burden of proving that there was undue influence, that they twisted their arm, that they shut off the oxygen, that they, you know, played with the pain meds. You have to show that, okay, if you're going to challenge it. But, if it's one of the people in the special relationship, if it's the caregiver, if it's the attorney in fact, the person operating under a power of attorney, if it's the patient advocate or the trustee or something, if that's the person who's benefiting from these changes, okay, then that person has to prove that there was no undue influence. We presume that there was. We presume, all right, this is how the law works. It goes from, well, it's up to you to prove that there was, to now it's up to them to prove that there wasn't any undue influence, that the changes that were made that benefit them, okay, that benefit the caregiver, that benefit the fiduciary, were the product of free choice. Well, guess what? Here's the way it works. Whoever has the burden of proving something loses. All right, so if you have to prove undue influence, if it's on you to prove that there was undue influence, you lose because it's very difficult to show that. On the flip side of it, it's very difficult to prove that there was no undue influence. Okay, proving a negative, good luck. Okay, so whoever has the burden of proof basically loses, and that's how undue influence is set up. So you know, where we've got significant benefits, all these changes benefit the caregiver. In this particular situation, it seems as though, it seems likely as though the caregiver is going to have the burden of showing that there was no undue influence, which is like almost impossible to do. And so now they're the ones who's going to be, on board. Okay. We've got a few more of these emails. You know, isn't it? It's the holiday season, right? Goodwill and all the rest. Hey, let me get to one and, we'll answer it in the, after the news. It's an inheritance question. What rights do I have as a child of someone who has passed, parent died, if sibling claimed that they're the sole heir to dad's estate and took all his money, car, and personal possessions? Can I have him prosecuted for fraud? There isn't enough money to go through probate. I can't afford to file in probate, but I want what is rightfully mine. Dad died without a will, had power of attorney that named me as his agent. What we didn't understand is that this would not be any good once he died. Well, obviously, these people did not listen to the show, right? He actually had a clause in the POA that he wanted me to administer his financial and health issues before and after his death. Makes you wonder who wrote that thing. We thought this was good enough. Well, faithful listeners know better. My sister went to the bank, filed an affidavit that stated she was the only child and was his only heir. I just need to know if I can prosecute her for fraud or am I stuck? And I have to tell his creditors they won't be paid. We'll be getting to that when we get back from the news. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare him room, and heaven and nature sing, and heaven and nature sing, and heaven and nature sing.
Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So give us a shout, why don't you? 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843, 2843. And we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. Now, you can use that number anytime you like. That's 888-GO-DAVID. And call the office during normal business hours. If you hit 1, then you'll talk to a live person. If you prefer to talk to a machine, no problem. I don't know why you would, but if you do, hit 2, and then it'll record your, you can record a message if you hit 2. Of course, we also make it easy to sign up online, all that computer interweb type stuff. Drop us an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com, or just go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com. You'll see the upcoming workshops, life plan workshops are right there, and you can even leave us a message on the website. We'd make it easier for you if we could. So if you have any suggestions along those lines, I mean, how could we make it easier? We even take passenger pigeons. I mean, messenger pigeons. Send us a pigeon. If you say, hey, you know, I'm not into that telephone stuff. I communicate with pigeons. Well, that's okay. Let us know and we'll set up a pigeon coop and then you can send us, send us your message by pigeon. If you're into that kind of thing, it's up to you. 888-463-2843. The question here is, the email that we started talking about right before the news has to do with a situation where, dad put together a power of attorney, all right, which is an authority, authorization for somebody to act, while that person is alive. Now, that person doesn't have to be mentally competent if it's a durable power of attorney. But the person has to be alive. What if the person's not alive? Well, that's the end of the power of attorney. Okay, over and out. And dad died without the will, had a power of attorney that named the person writing the email, the son, as the agent, but didn't understand that this wouldn't be any good once he died. Okay, faithful listeners know that powers of attorney die when the person dies. Right? So if you've got a power of attorney and you're thinking, oh, I don't need a trust or I don't need a will or I don't need anything because I've got a power of attorney, you know that that is a mistake, right? But now, you know, the question is, what do we do about sister? Sister went to the bank, filed an affidavit, stated she was the only child and only heir, which means what? Which means that she took the money out of the bank. Now, how much money was there? We don't know. And wants to know whether sibling claimed took all his money. And I guess she also went to the DMV, the Secretary of State, or whoever it is, got his car and emptied his house, or emptied his apartment, because it doesn't say anything about a house. Personal possessions. All right, can I have that person, that sister, prosecuted for fraud? Well, sure. Sure you can. You know, it's a question whether or not there's enough stuff. Question whether there's enough stuff there to, you know, for it to make sense, right? Number one, whether sister has anything left. But those are all practical type questions. Legally, if she's filed an affidavit, a false affidavit, and received property from that false affidavit, I mean, that's larceny, that's criminal, that's, you know, that's bad. Okay, you're not supposed to do that. Now, it also says, do I have to tell his creditors they won't be paid? Well, you know, if I was the son, and, you know, it says I want what's, first of all, he says he wants what's rightfully his, but then he has to tell the creditors that they won't be paid. Well, I mean, which is it? I mean, did he have sufficient debt that the assets would be eaten up by the debt, by the creditors? In that case, why waste your time? You know, give turn over copies of the affidavit and stuff to the creditors and let them go for it. You know, that's what I would suggest. You know, but I wouldn't. Let's assume that there is no extras. That it's just a matter of paying off the creditors. I can't see the advantage to brother doing that to sister. I mean, it's going to be a waste of time. You're not going to get anything out of it. Did sister do bad things? Yes. Is sister a thief? Well, yeah. I mean, it certainly seems like she's a thief, right? But, you know, life's too short. I mean, creditors, they're not related to sister. What do they care? You know, they just want their money. So I would get out of the way of that one. That's what I would. That would be my suggestion. Let's go to another long. Here's another long-term care one. Hi, my mother will soon be going to a nursing home. Is my stepfather responsible for her nursing home expenses after her money? Well, we'll get there, but first we've got Darcy on the line. Good morning, Darcy. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Darcy. Hey, how can I help?
Okay. I have my son is now 26 years old, and when he was a baby, his grandfather started a savings account for him.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
And then when he was 25, if he reached 25 without going to college first, his grandfather gave him the money. So he bought a car.
Okay.
And now the IRS is coming after him for taxes. It was like $6,000. Now they want $900 in taxes. I thought that a relative could give up to $10,000 to a family member without getting hit with for taxes.
Well, but yeah, well, it's $14,000 now, and that's the annual gift tax exclusion, okay? And it's the person giving the gift, not the person receiving it. Now, I think your dad, excuse me, your dad set this thing up how many years ago?
Well, he's 26, so 25 years ago.
Okay. And how much money did he put into it at the start?
Well, that, I mean, like, it was a very small amount, so all of this is
interest. Right. And
yeah,
that's where, see, what they do, it's a Uniform Gift to Minor Act, probably, account, or Uniform Trust Act account. And
yes.
Right. So what he's being taxed on is not the gift itself, okay, but it's on the interest that was earned on the gift. So when that account cashes out, it's like an IRA almost, right? Except for the original investment was not tax deductible. But all that interest, all that compounding over 25 years, all that interest is the somebody's got to pay the tax on it, and it's going to be your son. Because he's the one who received it.
Wonderful.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I just kind of figured, I just hoped that somewhere in there came that $14,000 gift thing and didn't include the interest earned.
Well, you know, but here's the question to you. How much income does your son have?
Income as far as...
Yeah, I mean, how much money does he have?
Annual income?
Yeah.
His work, his job?
Yeah.
Well, he makes, I think, like about $15 an hour over the course is, what, 30-some thousand?
Okay. Well, then, okay. I was just thinking if he was, if he was, like, unemployed or very low income or something like that, then... But he got $9,000 and he's paying $600 of tax on it. Did I get that right?
No, he got $6,000 and he's paying $900 of tax.
Okay. So 15%. Yeah. So he's at the 15% tax bracket. Okay. If he's making $30,000 otherwise, and then he's got $9,000 more of income, then it's 15%, and that fits. You know, that kind of makes sense. I don't think he's overpaying the tax on it. But that's the tax.
No, but I mean that's okay. So there's no getting around it.
Death, taxes, you know.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just hoping something else would come in on that. But
right.
Well, thank you very much.
No problem, Darcy. Thanks for calling. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
Jingle bells, jingling all the way. It ain't fun like it used to be in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingling all the way. I should have worn long underwear in that one-horse open sleigh.
Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. And yes, we're wearing long underwear because they don't heat the studio. That's one thing if we had gotten some coal in our stocking, at least we'd have had something for the stove. But no, so we're a little bit chilly here, but that's okay. That's okay. We'll soldier on. Don't worry about it. Yeah, those are Adam's teeth chattering, not mine. Let's see. We were talking. What were we talking about? Okay. Hi, my mother will soon be going to a nursing home. Is my stepfather responsible for her nursing home expenses after her money runs out, I guess? Mom has $75,000 in liquid assets. I own the home she and my stepdad live in. My stepdad has about $200,000 in liquid assets, owns a farm valued at $1 million. The farm and his assets are in his name only. They've been married 27 years. Is he responsible for her nursing home expense after her money is used up? He lives on his Social Security and the income from his farm. My mother's funeral has been prepaid through a trust. Is there anything else we should be doing? You know, this is a, the whole blended family kind of thing. 27 years, that's a while, right? 27-year marriage. And they still have separate accounts. Well, certainly, see, there's two ways to look at this, right? The first way is from just a contract perspective. All right, just look at it as a contract. All right, mom has $75,000. She wants to buy some stuff. Namely, she wants to buy nursing home care. Okay, 6 months from now, that money will be gone. And then who's going to pay? Well, the nursing home says, what's mom got? Mom's got nothing. Okay, mom gets booted, right, from the nursing home. Well, what about dad? Well, what about Medicaid? You know, we should have Medicaid pay. Well, mom's not going to qualify for Medicaid because dad has those assets. Does dad have to sell the farm? Does dad have to spend the money? And the answer is no, he doesn't. You know, they can't force him to. On the other hand, mom doesn't have any money. And Medicaid won't pay. So what's the nursing home going to do? Well, use your imagination, okay? They're going to try to separate her. They're going to try to get rid of her one way or the other. Now, can they legally throw mom on the street corner? The answer is no. You know, call a cab and send her down to Salvation Army. No, they can't do that, right? But it's going to be an ugly situation. Now, here's the other thing. Dad's got a farm worth $1 million. Okay, well, how are we going to exempt that? And it's not homestead, even though he may have lived there, right? And he's got $200,000. What the what Medicaid does is it says, okay, mom's got 75, dad's got 200 plus 950, and they look at this all together because a married couple is what they call an asset control group, okay, because they control the assets together. That's how it's viewed. And all of dad's assets are going to be attributed to mom for the Medicaid. What has to be done? You know, is there anything else we should be doing? Well, the answer is yes, and I mean right away. They need to be talking with an elder law attorney. There are ways to fix this. There are ways to solve this problem. Okay, but it's going to depend on what are different people willing to do. Is everyone willing to work together? What documents are in place already? What is mom still competent to put in place now? Okay, there are still some very good things that could be done. But you know, it's like we were talking about the last time. You don't want to start down a path where you say, well, I got 75, that, you know, that's plenty. Well, it's plenty for 6 months, you know, depending on what it costs. Maybe get 8 months out of it. Just depends where you are. Okay. Maybe you could get a year out of 75,000. Okay. What are you going to do when the year's over? All right. You know, you're on the train now. Okay. The freight train, it's heading for the mountain, heading for the wall. What are you going to do? And the answer is you got to see somebody. You got to see an elder law attorney who knows what they're talking and who doesn't say, "Oh, don't worry about it." Well, you got to worry about it. Is there anything else we should be doing? The answer is absolutely yes. You know, one of the questions is how is it that the writer here owns the house that they live in? I mean, was it just his house? Was it mom's house? Did mom give you the house? You know, you own it. Did that happen, what, last month, last week, 10 years ago? Or it was always your house? A lot of questions here that you really need to dig into. You know, this is one that we got interrupted on our phone call. We got a situation where the kid, if you recall this, where the kid is proposing to take a home equity line of credit against secured by mom's house in his own name, right? Mom's been home care for 3 years. Cash savings are over. My personal assets, I'm reading it, being used to cover the deficits but cannot sustain the burden because also retired, meaning that the child is also retired. Leveraging against her property in my name is the only reasonable financial alternative. You know, and I just have to question that. You say it's the only reasonable financial alternative. Maybe it takes somebody else kind of looking in to see, is that the only reasonable financial alternative? You know, it's pretty tough when you're in the it's in the Army. I swear to goodness, you can't go into, especially Corps of Engineers. we had one in my office at the Pentagon, but you can't go into a Corps of Engineers office without the sign on the wall that says, it's got a picture of an alligator, right? And it says, when you're up to your ass in alligators, it's hard to remember that you came to drain the swamp, okay? When you're in it, when you're being bombarded on all sides, you know, with what do we do now and all these choices and all these things going on, right? When you're being bombarded, when you're up to your ass in alligators, it's tough to remember what is the big picture, what was I trying to accomplish when I started this, okay? And so when you think that the only reasonable financial alternative is for the child to borrow money, right, secured by the mom's house, you know, unless that's a $1 million house and eventually it's all going to come around right, and there are particular ways that need to be done to make it come around right, you need to rethink that one. You know what I mean? I get that you're being bombarded with all kinds of questions, and this is one of the functions that we serve for families, is when all these things are crashing in, you know, care choices, money choices, all the rest of this stuff, it's our job to kind of say, okay, let's back off, take the big picture, take the macro view of the thing, and let's start putting together a solution that's going to deal with these issues. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, looking forward to seeing you in the new year at one of our free life plan workshops. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.